Welcome back to the Street Smart Podcast, the Sweatbox Endurance Edition of the podcast. And today we're going to talk to Olivia and Ralph. And tell me how to pronounce your last name.
Arnotts, like astronauts.
Arnotts, right. And you have to scoot it closer. Oh. You can't, I mean, I told you it's in front, but you have to also be in
reach
front of it.
Yeah,
you got
to
be there. And they've got an interesting background, interesting story. They were very gracious to open up their home to the podcast, and I'm just thankful to have them on, and anxious to get to know them a little bit better, and hear what they're doing. They're doing some really exciting things, and a couple of veterans, and I can't imagine a better backdrop. We haven't had one yet, so it's all good. But thank you guys so much for being a part of this. So as we get started doing this, I just want to know who you guys are more than even you know, the businesses that you guys are associated with. But we will definitely talk about that too, because I know that's important.
Yes.
But there's a long story in most cases of how you got to that business, and that's really what I'm interested in learning the most about, and then you know, obviously, you know, where you're going from here. So. Since ladies first.
That makes him happy because he's
right.
Always excited.
That's right. That's right. Tell me where you were born, where you were raised, and kind of some of your life experiences up to now.
Well, the early part of my childhood was spent in Montana, Big Sky Country. Definitely enjoyed living, you know, the outdoor lifestyle growing up and camping, and spent the rest of, you know, about half of my childhood and teenage years in Arizona in a town. I call it a runaway town, but they probably wouldn't like to hear that.
So. Right.
About 400 people, middle of nowhere. And I joined the military at 17. I wanted to get, you know, out of there, and joined as a signals intelligence analyst, and got really fortunate to get sent straight to Hawaii. So can't complain there.
Hey, man, it could be way worse.
I know. I got the beaches, but
straight from Montana to Hawaii.
Right?
That's not bad.
Yes. Different, completely different, you know, everything. And I got to jump straight into mission as well. So I got I was fortunate not to be sweeping the parking lots like some of my peers. And I got to go, you know, to the agency and support mission right away. And then after I left the military, I went into corporate security, working global security and incident response for ExxonMobil and G4S, and mm-hmm. before moving into private intelligence. And when I went into private intelligence, I realized, you know, how much power civilians have as well in supporting the government, supporting justice and safety. So after working there for a while and realizing that the work environment was horribly toxic and abusive, I chose, and pretty much the entire team chose, to leave that. Ralph and I decided to burn our boats and take the island and made our own business and our own business plan. So that's kind of my side of the story and kind of where I come from.
That's awesome. So when you joined the military, was that something you'd always wanted to do? Did you have family that was military and you were like, man, I'm going to follow in those footsteps?
Oh,
or
no.
Just kind of a...
I've got some uncles that are military. Mm-hmm. I have one aunt who I think she wanted to, but was, you know, it didn't work out for her. But my family's definitely more of the outlaw type, you know,
gotcha.
Kind that grew up not thinking the government was there to help. And my brother joined the Navy when I was probably 8 or so, and I think that probably had a play in it.
Okay.
One, I wanted to be better than him, so I had to join the Army so I could, you know. But
you know, every branch destroys each other.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then they have the common enemy is the Coast Guard, and
yes.
So
oh yeah, and Air Force.
You know, it's well, now wait a minute. Now I knew you were going to do that. There was a guy yesterday, an interview that I had that worked for that company, and he said, you know, where are you parked? I'll get the stuff and bring it to the conference room. I was like, you don't have to do that. And he said, you know, Marines been taking care of Air Force forever. And I was like, look, I wasn't in the Air Force. Like, it's my wife. So I catch it by proxy.
Guilty by affiliation.
Yeah, it is by proxy for sure. So what prompted you to join the military? Was it just did you see that as an opportunity to kind of do things that you knew you wouldn't have the opportunity to do?
Yeah, absolutely. That was a huge part of it was what I saw growing up. If you stayed in our hometown, you were there to stay, and there was just nothing that the town had to offer. So I knew if I wanted to, you know, break generational curses, if I wanted to make a difference, mm-hmm. I'd have to leave. But I also, I just was really, I wanted to be challenged. I wanted to be underestimated. I wanted to come into it, you know, having them look at me like, really, you came to the Army?
Mm-hmm.
And then I wanted to, you know, prove them wrong. So I think that was a big part of it and why I chose the Army versus, you know, any other branch.
Sure.
But yeah, it was definitely a fact that if I wanted to get out of my town, if I wanted to be something different, I'd have to get a move on and get out. And that was really an option that, you know, I didn't have the money to go to college.
Sure.
I didn't have, opportunities like that. So this was a way for me to, you know, pave my own way and get out of the town.
That's awesome. And military's great.
Yeah,
in terms absolutely. Of, you know, if I can't tell you how many friends I have that were military that would tell you, my wife would say that. You know, she looked around and said, I'm really not doing anything, and, you know, working three jobs, and all of them were yeah. like, and not that there's anything wrong with it, but she was a server mm-hmm. at restaurants, three
they
different places, you know,
her
and
for her future.
Correct.
They were
and
building her life.
She's making just enough to pay the rent so that yeah. she can have a place to live mm-hmm. to wash the clothes that she works in,
yeah.
you know, and she said, I'm gonna join the military. So it is a great opportunity. I would encourage, my youngest daughter actually is in ROTC. And going on to the Air Force because it's the best branch, and she's going to go there, and so she's very excited about that. But it's interesting. Her original plan was to go. She wanted to go Security Force and be a dog handler, and then she realized she might end up in
scanning
North
cars.
Dakota, guarding an airplane with a dog. So I think she's now looking at maybe going into something still in security forces, but like forensics or something like that. But and then so you lied to me immediately when we got here. You told me you were Southern California, and then she corrected you.
Yes.
So it you know, not a great way to start out, but that's okay.
It'll work.
It worked out. But so you're actually.
Born in Cologne, Germany.
Overseas.
Yeah.
I'm going to pin this to your shirt.
All right. So
it's going to be.
So there we go.
Really awkward.
I'm trying to keep like the open line here. Here we go.
That's okay. Just,
hey, the camera doesn't know that I can't see her.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Right, that's fair. That's fair. All right. So yeah, so I was born in Cologne, Germany. Like the whole background from my family is my whole dad's side of the family, from his grandfather's side was all NATO. So they were all NATO. They were officers in NATO. My dad grew up in boarding school in France. So once my dad and my mom got together and all this, right, it was unique. It was like a cool situation. And my brothers got like fully raised there when we were five. When I was 5 years old, we moved to the United States and we went to Southern California. So when we came here, we didn't really have anything. So my dad's priority was to learn English. So we only spoke English in the house. So I was 5 years old, so I dropped the other language. Mm-hmm. I only spoke English. Every so often you'll see like I try to say an analogy or something and Olivia literally does not stop ripping me one for this, and she'll be like, that doesn't even make sense. And
none
until literally about
sense.
A year and a half ago she made sense that
it's not
technically
first
it wasn't my first language, but I don't
so
remember
his parents,
anything else.
I mean, the things that he heard growing up, the phrases, you know, that we all
right,
my mom
right.
says all the time, his are all kind of scrambled a little bit, so it's like really funny because you'll hear it and it will just you'll recognize it, but it's a little bit off. And it took me a long time to realize, oh, it's just the way his parents spoke.
And I would swear by it, like, no, I've heard it.
No,
before.
That's absolutely
like,
the way
that is
yeah.
what it is.
Yeah.
Everybody else is wrong.
So
clearly,
yes, you'll hear it.
Yeah.
So then just went to school, finished all that. So originally when I joined. I've always wanted to join, like that was a portion of it, but I wanted to join, go infantry, and then from there, I wanted to finish like my contract, try to knock everything out in my first contract, get out and go to commercial diving school because I wanted to weld underwater.
Oh, I got
so
you.
I had grown up scuba diving, I've grown up spearfishing in Southern California, doing a lot of like outdoor stuff. No one in my family is an outdoorsman by any means, so it was me by myself and then friends. And then after school, like on Fridays, we would literally take a backpack, we would take canned food from our parents,
mm-hmm.
take canned food, zip it up, throw a blanket in there, and
disappear.
We lived right on the base of the mountains.
That's awesome.
So, and we would just go up in, we'd have fun, we'd hang out, or we'd go on adventures. Like there was two times before I joined the military, my parents told me no. I was kind of like a rebel growing up, and they told me no, that I couldn't drive cross country with a friend.
Mm-hmm.
So they were like, you guys don't have money, you guys don't have a plan, you guys don't have anything.
As a dad, that seems like a reasonable no.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ralph wasn't very reasonable.
I'm just saying it's a reasonable 18. No. But I think I know where it's going, but it was a reasonable no.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And I just hit 18, so I was like, all right, cool. They went to work in the morning. I literally grabbed a backpack, didn't plan, so they were correct. Grabbed a backpack, hopped in the car with my buddy, who he had just finished all of his AIT from Air Force, so he was home to pick up his stuff, and then he had to go to Seymour Johnson out in, I think, North Carolina is where it is. It's right next to, like, Greensboro.
Yeah, and, so the furthest point from Southern California.
Yep, pretty much.
Yeah. So we went out there. It basically took his whole paycheck to drive home from AIT with his car because he bought a car and then drove home. So he had not a lot of money. It wasn't close to payday. I had zero money because I wasn't doing anything, like, productive in life yet. And we set off on this adventure, and it was cool. We watched midget wrestling in Dallas. We drove through all these different places. I learned how to drive manual during this period because his GTI was manual. And he was like, dude, I'm not driving the whole thing. So I drove from Dallas all the way to Mississippi, and that's where I learned how to drive manual. It was pretty easy because most of it was highway, but we no bullshit, pulled off the highway into a dirt lot. And it was a used GTI, and everything on it was stage two.
Oh, okay.
So it wasn't completely forgiving. And I learned in that dirt lot, and then he was like, all right, bro, bring us back on the highway. And I was
Let's go. We got to go now.
Say no more.
Yeah, let's do this. That is definitely an adventure.
Yes.
And I'm pretty sure you can still see midget wrestling in Dallas. They have midget wrestling here sometimes, and it's always sold out.
It's legit.
And I did not. And I know it's always sold out because I try to get tickets every time.
Hmm. You haven't been?
No.
Oh.
We'll keep an eye on it. We'll go.
The highlights are a lot of them can't stand up on their own, so they have to, like, low crawl to the side and then use their arms to climb back up.
That's
and that's
amazing.
When the most violent stuff happens because the other one's still up.
When the most violent.
It's
all right.
It's cool.
So you're on this adventure across the country. Obviously, you made it.
Mm-hmm.
So fantastic. And how old were you when you joined the Army?
I was 20.
Okay.
So it was three times that I was told, like, hey, we're going to pay for school, like, we can pay for school not to go, so I didn't go, and I was going to originally join with my best friend. Well, the second time I was like, look, dude, you just go, don't worry about it, like, if this doesn't happen, I'm still going to join.
Sure.
Ended up not happening, so I was like, okay, cool. So I still went back, and then I kind of didn't really tell too many people or, like, parents or anything until after I was, like, already going to MEPS to go, like, swear in officially and everything.
That's
so there was no going back.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
I got a thing to do today. It's I've got to go take care of some stuff, and oh, by the way,
yes so it was interesting. And then ironically though, I did go talk to the Coast Guard first.
Well,
because I'd played in the water my whole life, so I was like, all right, being a rescue swimmer, because I played water polo too in high school on top of wrestling, like, all the way through, so I was like, that would be, like, a job I would enjoy, like, thoroughly.
I think there was a time you know, back before, like, 9/11 and that type of stuff, and even maybe just a little bit after that, that the on the Coast Guard fired more rounds at other people than any other branch because of all the drug interdiction and
everything
stuff. So, it was, I don't know that people realize that they actually do
some pretty
incredible stuff.
And their schedules tend to be way more chill than the other branches. Like, we would, when I was working agency, it was every branch possible would all come in together.
Sure.
And we were always jealous of them. They would come in all casual, like, a couple hours after everybody else.
Right.
And
yeah,
no,
hey,
one's there
on,
to
guys?
Answer to them. Like, they just come in, do their thing, leave whenever they feel like it.
Yeah.
When you say it like that, it doesn't sound bad. They're with the they're in Homeland Security now, though, right? They're not.
I think they're Department of State.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I know they're not.
Because I know they're not DOD.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's what I meant.
That's the only one I know. But I'm not sure which one they belong to now.
And we replace them with Space Force.
Maybe they'll stop pretending they're a branch of the military now.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Practically like Border Patrol.
They might stop that, but they will never stop getting just bagged on.
True.
Oh, yeah.
Probably. That will never stop.
They'll still be the ugly stepchild of the military.
Right. So, 20 years old, joined the Army.
Yeah. And so I did go. So I had to wait, like, before I joined them, I had to wait, like, 2 months because they wanted me to do, like, stuff that I didn't want to do job-wise.
Gotcha.
They were like, hey, we got, like, missile launch specialists, all these different kinds of things. And I was like, no, man, like, this is all I want.
Yeah.
And they were like, the guy tried to talk me out of it. No one else in that office was infantry. So they were like, hey, do this, do this, do this. I waited, I don't know exactly how long, but it was a cool minute. I waited, and then May is when I finally, like, swore in at MEPS, and then I left in August. I got to Fort Benning, Georgia, when it was hot,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
hot and humid, and I was not used to hot and humid. And then I left there when it was like freezing at night. So we graduated in December. And it was pretty cool. Then everyone there got orders to Fort Campbell, Kentucky, right? And I was envious of that because I wanted to go to Fort Campbell or I wanted to go to Bragg or I wanted to go somewhere like one of the main units, the big boy units. And me and one other dude got selected to go to Hawaii. And everyone was like, oh, let me trade you, bro. Let me trade you. And so we went and talked to the drill sergeant. It's like, hey, can we trade orders? And they're like, no, it doesn't work like that, man.
Right.
And I was like, okay. Went to Hawaii. It was nice because the spearfishing and like being in the water. That's a plus.
That's probably where you should start.
That's
okay. I understand. Right, spearfishing has got to come first.
Spearfishing.
I tried to get there fast enough to save you, and I knew where you were going. I was like, oh.
No. I almost feel like you set me up for that.
I didn't do that.
I know. And it was cool because I loved the water. Like, literally loved the water. I've never lived away from the water. And then that was it. Like, after our first date, it was, she would go and she would literally lay on the beach like before the sun even rises, and we'd be in the water spearfishing, and we'd get out around noon and she'd still be laying on the beach, just have like a grand old time because she likes her alone time.
Yes, I do.
So then she's with me but not really with me, so she's checking my box because now my girlfriend at the time came with me to do my event.
Right.
But I don't actually have to like talk to anybody. That is A1 in my book.
So that's a solid relationship. Yes. I'm not going to lie, man. That's awesome.
Yes.
Yep, we got a good...
That's a good one. So, you know, my wife had a similar thing when she wanted to stay, you know, all of her family's in Texas. And so she wanted to stay in Texas after, you know, whatever. And so when she got Germany, she was trying to trade. And she finally had someone take her aside and go, stop doing that. You'll regret not going.
You will. Yeah.
And she would tell you to this day that was one of the greatest experiences of her life, living in Germany for a couple of years. So I can appreciate that. But so now where you guys are connected, you're in Hawaii, both of you are in the Army. And so where's that story go?
So I didn't have a deployment and I was like, well, I kind of want to check that box before I get out to try to go to commercial diving school.
Sure.
And this was right before I had met her, like within weeks. So we have like a complete crazy Sunday night of partying. So Monday morning comes around and I was like, well, right now, right, I'm not in the right mindset to fully make a decision, but I was like, I want to do it. So I went to the retention guy, re-enlisted. They got me Fort Campbell, Kentucky. So I was like, yes, because a lot of my squad leaders had come from there, from their most recent deployment, were like, dude, you need to go here. This is the Mecca. Like, you will get deployments. So I was stoked about that. Got all that and then met her. And then, and then from then on, everything else was going through. And it was cool.
I think for the first like 4 years of our marriage, it was survival mode for both of us, really. I mean, he was gone almost all the time.
We're
at
in the
Fort
field
Campbell.
A lot.
I was home with a newborn and a 2-year-old. Yeah. And so I had just left the service. I knew it was going to be, you know, I had a top secret clearance. I was like, I'd worked for the agencies. Like, it'll be fine once it's time to go back. But I knew I also could not take a job that was, you know, not. It didn't have that fulfillment and that purpose because I would just be depressed. So
don't forget about your YouTube videos.
We'll bring them up. We'll get there.
Yes, we'll get there. Everybody can see how
that was right now.
It was amazing.
Okay. Yes. And so those small children were pretty much all I cared about in that time period. And after that, we were supposed to be at Fort Campbell for 6 years. That was the plan. And then we were there for 2 years and he got DA selected for recruiting duty. And so we were like, well, I mean, This is a good and bad, you know, we can go anywhere we want. And so we spent like 2 weeks, I still have the paper where we were discussing all of the pros and cons of all these different locations. And we ended up going with Houston because we knew I could use my intel background to make a difference and find a good, you know, worthy cause of to fight for in the area. So we decided to come here and it just, you know, it was really meant to be. It was after that, once we got here, things just kind of aligned in a way you know you really can't explain. So
Houston's a great place and there's so many, it's so diverse in industry and everything else that
that's the best part.
It's you can do a lot. You can really sort of forge your own path depending on what it is you're going to do. So with your background in intelligence, is that something that interested you immediately, or did you just sort of like, did someone, how does that happen that you get put in intelligence? Because it doesn't seem like they would just say, you.
No.
You know, how does that happen?
My uncle will be happy to hear this. Thank you, Uncle Brando. I actually met with a Marine recruiter for the first time I met with a recruiter, and he came out to my house in the middle of absolutely nowhere. Ended up sitting for 3 or 4 hours with my family. He brought these flashcards to, you know, really dive deep into my purpose in life. And like, I'm thankful for that, you know, every day, because recruiters
are called, those
not...
are called tarot cards. But...
yeah, exactly. He brought the tarot cards. He broke out the tarot cards. I realized my whole life purpose. Right. But no, honestly, it came down to, I was like, oh, I want to be a cop in the military. Like, that's what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And I was determined. And then thankfully that Marine recruiter was like, no,
that's
you're
not you.
A dumbass, first of all, because you can do anything you want. Right. And the Marines are not the right fit for you. And being a cop is not the right fit for you. But
dude, how amazing that a recruiter would tell you.
Right?
This branch
he
isn't
could
for
have
you,
written that off
right?
as a number that oh, night, wow, 100%. Man. And I think back and I'm still grateful for the fact that he was there because he cared. He was there because he wanted to make sure that I was making a good decision to create, you know, create a good soldier. Create
I mean,
a
that's the kind of recruiter you are, right?
Absolutely.
See?
Absolutely. He says it like it's a joke, but all of his recruits are like obsessed with him. Mm. And, you know, it's like he's hard on them and he gives them shit. And not a lot of other recruiters are really like that. They just don't care enough, really. And so I think
that's
what
they're
going to
that gonna experience in the real world, in the military or in real life.
People just don't care that much about what you're doing.
Yeah, I've had that conversation with my kids trying to prepare them, you know, and saying, the world does not care about you. It's in a lot of ways set up so that you aren't successful.
Yeah.
If you are successful, it's because you did it in spite of a lot of things. So it's interesting. So you had that's great that you had that recruiter come out and he essentially told you, hey, what you want to do is not what you need to do.
Yes.
And so did he leave you with, at the end of it, hey, you shouldn't be a Marine and you should go into intelligence?
Well, what he had said, he knew I wasn't right for the Marines. That was pretty much his 100%. You're not going to find a job in the Marines that's like the right fit.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had obviously probably just down the hall, whoever was in the Army office down the hall got, you know, my contact information. And then my uncle, who's been in the Army for, he's about
he
to
just
retire.
Retired.
Yeah, he's retiring this, retired this year. And he was the one that kind of opened my eyes to the 35 series of MOSs and told me to really like take some time to read the job descriptions and to think about how I'm going to transition out, because you're not in the service forever. Even if you're there for an entire career, I was joining at 17. So it's like, I'm going to retire at such a young age. Mm-hmm. I've almost got to plan a second career.
Right.
And so at that point he told me about that and I was able to kind of explore that a little bit. And the 35 series jobs and decided on signals intelligence analyst. I think mostly it was based on the fact that you got a top secret clearance. I knew that would transition well.
Yep.
And I had always kind of had an interest in computers and kind of how that stuff works. So it just seemed like a good fit for me.
And you loved it.
Yeah, I loved it. Yeah. I loved it. It was like I was good at it and it just seemed like a good fit, you know.
It was almost frustrating how much she loved her job and how happy she was. Like, yeah, so there was one night she called me and was like, hey, I'm going to the field. And at this time we were just dating, right? So I was in my barracks, she was in her barracks, and she was like, hey, I'm going to the field. Can you come over and help me set up all my gear? Like, all of her equipment
was still
in the plastic. Because
we never went to the field, ever.
Right.
And I was like, oh, no shit. No wonder why she loves her job. Like, she's not out there in the field getting rained on or cold or hot or whatever. And so I go over to her place, and I get there, and she's like, hey, this is all my stuff. And it was all in plastic still. And I was like, hold on. How long have you been here? And she was like a year. And I was like, and you've never opened up any of your gear? And she was like, no. And I was like, look, dude, instead of setting your shit up, just come over to my barracks. I'm not going to the field this week. You take my stuff, and you go to the field with it. And she was like, okay. Like, she's happy as hell. Like, goes, gets on the helicopter.
Sure.
Like, I know my shit's set up right. I'm not sitting there with any doubts.
Right.
And she goes out, and she's, like, all excited about going to this training area.
Yeah,
and it's where we do, like, the land nav out at Schofield Barracks. But when we would go, we would walk. They took helicopters. We would straight up walk all the way out there.
We don't do that.
And then we would get vehicles to bring us back. And it was, like, hills, just
no,
hills.
No, we took a Chinook to get there, just to tell you the difference. We were like, that is not, you know, passable terrain.
Yeah.
We're going to go ahead and take a flight.
Yeah.
And based off of that training, they should have gone to do land nav a lot more.
Yeah, oh no, it was a disaster. You can't put, so what it is, though, is like I worked 4 days a week. I would work 4 days on, 3 days off, and I report to the agency. So I'm not going to my unit. I'm not going to, you know, PT in the morning or anything like that. So it's like you almost get into this mindset that you're not even in the Army anymore. Yeah. You just go to work. Like you've just got this work job, this corporate job.
And you didn't have to wear like camis or anything.
We did, but that was it. Like you're not wearing your gear. You're not bringing a camel bag, like nothing ever. And so, yeah, randomly we have to go out to the field. I wear his stuff thinking I'm confident in it. Like, yeah, you know, infantryman stuff. It's set up.
Dude.
And we had this one NCO who just had it out for me. Let me tell you, he had it out for me. And later we find out he was sleeping with some lower-ranking soldiers while he's married with children. So that may have been, I wasn't interested. Might have been a problem there. But he, like, came up to me and he was like, dogging on the setup, and he's telling me, oh, you're not going to be able to wear that mag pouch right there because what happens when you got to throw yourself on a berm and blah blah blah, you know, he's just doing what he can do.
Well, you throw yourself on a berm and I'm like, is what you do.
Like, I don't care what's there. I'm going on the berm.
Oh no.
Oh, like, this mag pouch is poking me.
Something tells me if I have to throw myself on a berm, I don't care about that mag pouch.
You'd rather have your mag pouch accessible
correct
than have something poking you in the ribs. And that was like such a funny time for us because I like he was just on me that whole entire training.
Sort of exposes himself for how little he'd actually done anything, you know?
Exactly. You know, 100%.
Come to find out, someone in my leadership went to a school with that dude later on.
Yeah.
And he was telling the story, and he was like, oh, this dude's like such a kiss-ass, blah, 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 through it. And he was like, they go around asking each person like one question.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, that dude was right before me, and he said like six answers. And he was like, so I'm sitting there like, well, fuck, that doesn't really leave anything else.
Right.
And goes through, and then he was like, yeah, he's some intel dude. And Olivia's like, what was his name? And it was the same dude.
Because he was the only one who had been through Pathfinder.
Oh, okay.
And so we just knew, like, it was the same guy.
Is that guy?
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? It makes sense, because guys who go through Pathfinder are usually the guys who are like,
so maybe with you guys, with us.
With
us. They're squared away with us.
If you're intel, sort it out, you go Pathfinder, you're just questionable.
Yeah, you're sketchy.
Yeah.
So I understand wanting, when you go to the field, to have gear that looks like it's been to the field.
Yes.
I'm lifelong oil and gas industry, and in the 20 years that I've been oil and gas, I've started field and on up to where I am now, and now I don't get a new pair of work boots, every year like I have before, and so sometimes you end up like, oh shit, I gotta go to the field. So you go buy a new pair of work boots, and you get clowned on so hard for having a brand new pair of work boots, and. A funny story similar to that. One of the companies I was working for was drilling an oil well, and the bank that was sort of funding it wanted to come out with some bankers and see a drilling site. You know? So we're out there, and all these bankers pile off this bus in brand new boots, and the drilling superintendent, just this old, crusty dude. He's been drilling oil wells since they did it with a shovel, probably. And he leans over to me and he goes, bet you can get a smoking deal on a pair of boots after today. I said, you're probably right, man. I'd be looking to offload those because they'll never wear them again.
Yeah.
So you guys are now you're far enough along in your career that you're doing some things and you're where you wanted to be in Kentucky, and so then what's next for you guys?
So
there's a helicopter outside here.
Yes.
Did you do that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I called that in, Had my people call.
Fair enough.
It's literally, I think it's one of the flight paths for the Reserve Center up in Conroe, aviation, because there's Blackhawks that randomly go all
which we love. We're so used to seeing that, being so close to base all the time.
And, 3 years ago, I was like, whenever I'd see a Blackhawk in the family, I'd be like, oh my God, look, helicopter. I wouldn't even look. And then the first time one flew by, I was like, hey, look.
It's a Blackhawk, yeah. Where we live up in Conroe, and they'll fly over my house all the time, man. Yeah. And it's an unmistakable noise. Exactly what's coming over your house. So you're in Kentucky.
Yes.
And you guys are, you're loving your career. Houston. You're where you want to be.
I was kind of loving my career.
Okay.
I love my career, but because I was exactly where I wanted to be. I mean, I've never loved a job the way I love this job because I was working hard. I was kicking my own ass. Like, it was challenging and different, and I was making a difference in the people's lives and supporting government. But the workplace culture was so toxic.
It You're
was
still in the military unbearable. At this time.
No, I was out.
Okay,
I
no, we're talking about Kentucky.
Oh, Kentucky?
Not yeah. Texas.
So we're not to Texas yet.
So, okay, sorry. So up. Kentucky surprised this us, though. Like, we had plans for mom. Kentucky. Yeah, I was college mom at that point. You know, basically, I don't want to say single mom, obviously, because he was paying our bills, but he was gone, you know? It
you
was
got
like,
space at your house after this?
Yeah. I do, actually, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I can pay rent.
You're welcome. Well. You're welcome.
I just like it was.
You'll be the first one.
It was just, it was like that was survival mode for us. Sure. That was, he was gone. He needed to have that point in his career, though. Mm-hmm. He needed to be pushed there, too, because that's why he joined the service. Like, he had that desire in him to serve. And so I felt like that was his time. That was for him to do what he was called to do. And I worked on what I was going to do after. And then we got surprised and decided to come to Houston. And that's like where we really. Like, this is our first house that felt like home.
Sure.
This is like the first time I got I entered back into the you know, security world, working for ExxonMobil.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was like kind of where things started to shift and change for us, where it went from survival mode into like, okay, what's the next chapter?
Yeah, let's make a life.
Yeah,
right?
Let's make a life.
Yeah, it was our first time knowing like, hey, this could be potentially like the end of our road of getting told where we have to go, what we
right.
have to do.
Right.
And we weren't really sure like at that point. So it was our first time like,
it's our choice at
yeah.
this point.
And we finally started building a family. So like when we first got married, we had like a red pleather sectional sofa.
Just peeling apart.
That was missing like a section, and it was like straight up peeling.
TV
and
on the ground.
If it's missing a section, does it still count as a sectional?
There were still two sections. Yeah. It was missing the third.
Yeah.
It was a dual sofa.
Yeah.
It was just a big chair, really.
Yeah,
basically.
Essentially.
Mattress on the ground.
And it was me and my dog would fit on this section, and Olivia would have like the little section to my right. It was.
Oh, you're such a gentleman.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And she liked that dog, actually. It was a spur of the moment. She was
that's
pregnant.
What she told you.
No,
she fell in love with him. He was a good dog.
A rescue dog is a very quick way to my heart. So.
Rescue dogs are fantastic, man. Yeah. It's interesting. They always understand the chance they've been given,
yeah.
which is
mm-hmm.
an interesting interesting take.
He was straight off the road.
Yeah, oh, like an embedded chain collar grown into his skin.
Oh,
his
man.
Nails were grown all the way around because it's like soft dirt out there. It's
right,
not hard.
Right,
so
right.
his nails had grown around almost
looked like
into
somebody
his paws.
Had just cut his ears.
Tumors
scissors.
Hanging off his neck.
He had heartworms.
Like scars everything. All over him. And the vet was like, to be honest, like someone either bred him for dog fighting and he wouldn't fight. So they used him
yeah.
as like
bait
kind of like an aggro
yeah,
dog
just,
yeah,
yeah,
to
yeah,
make
yeah.
up the other dogs mad and bring their aggression. Or he was a hunting dog and just got lost while hunting. Come to find out, that dog has zero prey drive. No way that dog could.
No, this
did
dog.
Did you guys name him Lucky? Because that's the only thing you can
that
name
was
that.
Zeus.
So he was like, you know how my other dog.
You
Titus
really missed
looks,
an
right?
opportunity there to name that dog Lucky.
To let them know, right? The dog we have now is Titus. He's a Presa Canaria. So he looked
and by
just
the way,
like him.
One of the prettiest dogs I've ever seen in my life, man. I'm gonna take pictures before I leave because my we love dogs.
Yes.
So my wife will be like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Talk about him. We sent the breeder a video of Arabella walking him because she can straight up walk him.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
take him on a walk.
He behaves.
And he
because
put it
he
on
allows
his
it.
Yes, exactly.
200,000 views.
Yeah,
from
no
that
kidding.
One random
yeah.
video. Yeah,
no,
and it's just so literally my daughter, literally on our street, just walking the dog. And
because
then,
it's so absurd looking,
it
I
is,
would imagine.
It really is. Mm-hmm. She's like shorter than his entire
when she
stature.
Was,
and she's how old?
And she was 2 at the time.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And she
would
just
like head to head with him.
Yep, he wouldn't go past
we
her.
We could legitimately get her a saddle
yes.
to ride
we
that.
We talked about
yes.
that quite often.
Yes.
Strapping
okay, well,
a baby carrier on there.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So
when you guys transitioned to Houston, you got out of the military and you
I was
you're
still in.
You're still in.
Yeah, cuz I had signed a 6-year contract up there because they had come out and said that unit was going to be going to Afghanistan again.
Right.
Come to find out, they got sent to the border mission, but I got sent to recruiting. So I did 6-year contract, but that's 18-month stabilization. So it's guaranteeing I'll stay at Campbell for 18 months.
Okay.
Well, 18 months in one day was my report date for fucking recruiting.
Yeah, they really said, okay,
so
what's the minimum?
So they literally swindled me. So in that 18-month window, I went
me.
To recruiting school and then PCS
right.
leave and all
yeah.
that. And then
right,
it was
right.
my report date here. So
yep.
I was like,
I packed
that was the
up
first
that whole
time.
House by myself.
And you think, well played.
Yes,
Army.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, that was the first time I was like, you know what? I'm kind of upset at you guys right
yeah.
now.
But it's hard to even, it's like, oh, you've done this before.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
you knew the game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
And they did it. And it was odd, though, because they almost like fenced in everyone before that when they were saying we were going to go to Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't really letting people like leave to like PCS or anything mm-hmm. like that.
Right, right.
There was almost nothing open. So we were all like, dude, like, the big guy said it. like, we see how everything's acting, and they're hanging out big bonuses right now.
Mm-hmm.
So we were like, absolutely. So all of us just, like, walked on over there, and we're all signing.
Yeah, we're
like,
in.
They ran out of stuff to give.
Let's go.
And we're like, yeah, this is legit. And that's that bonus is where I bought Titus from.
Yeah.
And it was my good friend, Brian. We drove down. We called the breeder. And at first, there was this a bigger one than Titus, but he was beige. And the breeder was like, hey, someone paid in full for him, but they never showed up to pick him up. And now he's 10 weeks, and we placed him at 8 weeks. Like, he has to go imprint with his owner practically because of his breed. So we're like, okay, cool. So I call him, and I'm like, hey, like, my bonus should be, like, posting any day, like, waiting for it. And then the next day he calls me and goes, hey, someone's flying in to look at the dog from out of state, and he wants this dog. So I will give it to him. Like, he's going to pay full price. So then he calls me back, and, like, the following day, so now it's 3 days later, and he's like, hey, the dog's gone, man. But we have this other litter. And I was like, ah. And he was like, his grandfather is, like, 2016 Mongo African champion, all this kind of stuff. Mom is, like, great with protection work. So I was like, okay, sweet. So
I can't imagine a better-looking animal than what
you
have.
I agree.
Dog is so pretty.
I almost ditched him when we picked him up.
Well,
it's like a half-a-mile driveway, right, from the dude's house, like, to where the kennels are, right?
Uh-huh.
It's a half-mile driveway, and then it's a gate code to get out. By the time we got to the end of that driveway, I had a kennel in the back with, like, a nice brand-new dog bed, like a really nice dog bed that also came from the bonus. The dog diarrheaed all over it, and then he puked all over it. So then we roll it up. We put it in a trash bag. Like, ironically, we brought trash bags with us,
thankfully,
but nothing else. So then we leave there, and we're in, like, the hills of Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the dog starts puking again, and we're like, what the fuck? Like, the dog just must have just ate right before we picked him up.
Right.
So we're like, okay, cool. So we clean that up, and now we're down a shirt. So we're like, okay.
Whose shirt?
I think it was just a shirt in the car. I think it was one of my kids, to be honest. One of my kids' shirts that was in the back seat.
So you took your kid's clothes for the dog. That's cool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's
absolutely
probably happened more than one time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially with the amount
of
time.
You got to do what you got to do.
You do.
You got to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
They're basically kids, too, so.
That's true.
You got to give up your shirt for your family. I guess it's got to happen.
Yes.
Could be. Yeah, I mean,
but then he came home and then destroyed everything we owned for the next 2 years.
That was fun. Emergency surgery twice.
For eating things he couldn't digest, which he could eat. He could digest 2 pounds of grapes, which he stole off the counter, which is supposed to kill dogs.
First of all, who buys 2 pounds of grapes?
People who have 3- and 5-year-olds.
I guess, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's fair.
They gobble them down.
They go through grapes.
Combat boot, he ate the entire couch. There was the first pair of nice, like, eyewear I ever got, like, just actual seeing glasses.
Sure.
That's when he drug the entire couch across the room to eat my glasses.
He wanted those specifically.
He's like, what will piss her off today?
That's a good one.
It was literally, she didn't give him love at that time.
No, because
he
was sneaking mad all the time.
Not mine. He ate one of my boots, the only thing I can say that dog ruined from mine.
And it's probably because she touched it or something.
Probably. He probably saw me walk by with it, and he was like,
I'm killing that boot.
That's it.
He probably mistaked it for her old boots, because I'm just going to straight up say, I got bitch feet. I got tiny feet.
You got tiny feet?
Yes.
I wear a size 7.5. So when she got out of the military, never going to the field, I was like, brand new garrison boots.
Yeah.
Like,
are you easy to knock over?
No.
Okay, he's actually not.
I have a good
center of gravity.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, I got you.
Yes.
All right, so you guys get to Houston.
Anyway, yes, we're on.
Right. It's fine to meander a bit. We get back to Houston now. And is that when you join ExxonMobil or?
Pretty close to it, yeah. I started looking, and it kind of, like, fell into my lap on accident, and it was a really great team. It was just 4 people. We worked 24/7 rotating shift work, basically providing all of the global security incident response for Exxon. And so that was, like, my first getting back into the workforce and getting back into, like, specifically security as a young female. And I was really excited about that. I was excited to be, you know, the only female on the team and just kind of getting back into the swing of things. And I loved that, but the issue for me, and I went into another GSOC after that, G4S, and helped them kind of, like, set up their SOPs and things like that, but it was all reactionary. There's no proactive intelligence work. It's I've realized there's a pattern in behavior in this area, and they're basically like, does it apply right now? No? Shut up. We've got a team for that. And so it was like, for a while, I love the GSOC because, yes, we're helping people, and yes, there's that, like, they need me here to help them, but there was that giant part of I wanted to be doing more, and I felt that it was holding me back, and that there was so many restrictions, and And that's when I went into private intelligence. And that was kind of like my first time seeing, you know, where private intelligence agencies, we tip off the FBI. Like, that's where sure. those things come from. It's from, in you know, civilian people saying, I've seen this thing, this is wrong. Here's the evidence of that, and I can prove that these people are involved. Here you go. And then that's kind of what, you know, starts the investigation from the government side a lot of the times. And so I got to kind of see that. And it was the toxic work environment, but it was also working on projects I just couldn't give a shit less about. Mm. And like, I'm dedicating time and my brain power that could actually be going to good.
Sure.
And so that was kind of like where we were like, we need to work on projects that we care about, that make an impact and make a difference.
And you guys figured the only way to do that would be
to
do your own thing.
Yes, because we knew that anybody else we worked for isn't going to see the value we see in exactly the way that we operate.
So how did you get comfortable with, like you said, burning the boats and taking the island? Like, how do you get comfortable?
There's only one way to do that. There is no comfort level. There is, you just have to take that deep breath and just jump, because it was at that point where we're saying, I could be doing this better, more effectively, you know, for a better purpose. And the only thing holding us back is just that one decision of saying, okay, I'm going to wing it. I'm going to do it myself. And we did have to come to terms with, like, you hear all the stories and it sounds like so exaggerative when people are like, oh, you have to be willing to face bankruptcy. You've got to be willing to do this for entrepreneurship. But it's like so factual.
Yeah, sure.
Like, take that so seriously, people. Yeah. If you want to be an entrepreneur, it is going to be like the worst day of your life every third day of the week, because shit changes like that quick. But also, like, there's been times where, you know, we think to ourselves, okay, we have this many days left until, you know, funds are running low and we've got to think of other options. And so it's like every day is just a fight to get to that level.
Sure.
And then to build it up beyond that, because we have so many friends who are so deeply ingrained into the business plan and so supportive and involved, that it's not just our plates that we're thinking of. Like, when we're doing business, we're like, oh, I've got 10 plates to feed tonight because our buddy and his daughters and whatever it might be. So that was kind of like what drew, like, was our pushing factor, was that it's not just us.
Yeah, and it would be like easy to come up with excuses not to do it.
So easy.
But the thing that's easier than that is, like, when you burn your ship, like, you're going to be in the water for a minute until you get on the beach. It's like, while you're drowning in that water, like my Jeep, we almost lost my Jeep. I literally did the payment one day before they had to elevate it the next one. And it was 3 months behind. And we were both sitting there like, dude, like, it's about to go bye-bye. Like,
yeah.
We're about to be down to one car. We had to fix this.
But to us, that was also
stuff
worth
on the house. And because, we were like, we're about to sink right now. But we're so far in right now. We're young enough to where if we get bankruptcy, who cares?
Who cares? Start over.
We'll go back. Like, we know she can get a job easily.
I was working an over six-figure job, like, without a problem. So for us, it's like, this is a voluntary suffer where we're like, yeah, we don't have the groceries we want. We're eating cheap. You know, we're not going out ever. We're not wearing the coolest clothes. But we get to this point where it's like it's worth it, because in the future, it's not only going to benefit our lives, it's going to benefit, you know, our children's and generation, friends and family, and like that culture that's missing in so many corporations that we see. Like, that's what we're working, that's what we're building.
So you're looking to build like generational change.
Yes.
Obviously, and your daughters are watching this and they're thinking to themselves, and they're young still, like very young. So they don't quite understand.
But they see it.
They
see it.
They absolutely probably see it, and they feel it when they're stressed.
But they have no idea what
it's for. Yeah.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. We tell her about the farm in the future, and like that's what our kids see, is like mom and dad are working hard to have
I can
a
assure you, being a kid of someone that had businesses and having watched my dad have to auction off a business before and you know, at times not take a salary himself and you know, those types of things and the sacrifice it takes, that as an adult and not like as a 40 something year old adult, like in my 20s, I was like, oh well, he really did a lot to achieve what he achieved, and they'll see that too, and they're going to learn lessons about just exactly what they're capable of watching you guys. So that's an amazing thing.
Yes.
And so you talk about, I knew I could do this better. And one of the things you mentioned was that everything you saw was reactionary. So I'm going to assume that what you think is better is that, you know, hey, let's get ahead of this problem so that there's not an actual problem that has to be dealt with, right?
Absolutely.
So what are you doing now and what you know, tell the ZFIS, yes. And that means something. I'm sure of it.
Oh, it does. I don't know if we're podcast
ready for this,
but I guess it goes with the spirit of things.
Sure.
The ZF stands for zero fucks.
Clearly.
Mm-hmm. You know, when you're at that point where you're at your lowest, you're at the bottom, and you don't have a choice. I mean, mm-hmm. what's the choice? You give up or you get up. And so for us, it's like you just have to get to the point where you don't give any fuck because you're going to make it happen.
Right.
And those things are just trivial compared to where you're going.
The failure is zero option.
Yes, exactly.
It doesn't even enter. It's not a factor
at
all.
No, it's not mm-hmm. a choice. It's not a consideration. So that's where the ZF comes from for ZFIS. And ZF Tactical Training Center,
mm-hmm. And ZF
Leadership Development Ammunition.
Like it's powerful.
It comes from the name mm-hmm. because that's what it is. And
plus, the merch is probably going to be outstanding.
Oh yes. Oh yes.
And the best part, outstanding.
Yes,
before all those other ZF companies, I had it tattooed on me.
Awesome.
And yeah. literally, the first time I ever tattooed it was, I was like, "Hey, I want to create a clothing company off of this." And then now, when we go to like
you have
look
to call
everything
it Zulu Fox
up to
Rock,
do it
for yeah. sure.
Yeah,
that's what their companies are called.
But yeah, we'll come up with something. Yeah. As long as we keep the ZF, and mm-hmm. then the people, the insiders, know what
like
it means.
We have some yeah. of the funniest, most seasoned dudes. Like our buddy Jesse. He's retiring from the Green Berets next year.
This year.
Next year.
Oh, this year.
He's dropping his packet this year.
This year.
Okay. But technically,
listen.
He'll be out, like, the end of the year.
I was reluctant to have husband and wife on for this reason. We're not going to have fights. This is yes. not Thanksgiving dinner.
We do love to bicker, but
that's fine.
We'll
bicker.
Keep it to ourselves.
Bicker's not fighting.
No, we never fight. We do bicker.
We actually don't fight.
We literally don't.
Surprisingly, we don't. The most we do is one of us will know, like, all right, I don't know how to communicate this at this time, and this is what took us the longest, and being
6 years.
Like, all right, barely been married 6 years.
I know.
And we would. Like stop at that moment and we would just go about whatever we're doing mm-hmm. or like walk away, separate. I can literally say we've never yelled at each other, like screamed at each other, never fought in front of our kids, all this. And I don't know how that's relevant
so
to this, but we've found a way.
It's relevant
to
because it's a relationship
other.
That I mean it when you're in business with that person.
Yeah.
And then when you're in business with that person and that person is your spouse,
it's
that's a different stress
tenfold.
Too. So
absolutely.
I think that's a great skill, honestly, just to be able to, I do not have that skill.
Yeah.
My wife is one that will, if we're in the middle of a conversation that we're not quite on the same page with, she's one that will want to go to neutral corners and mm-hmm. then we'll come back later. And I'm like, no, let's sort this out now. And so I wish I had that skill set that you're describing.
That's
so.
Where I came from, though.
Yeah, that's where we started,
both of us.
For sure, too. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But then we were like, this is really unproductive. Because now I'm saying stuff with my feelings
right.
instead of like
that you might not
thinking
even mean,
about it.
Or
well, I find most of the time my wife and I are saying the same thing differently.
That is where we are, too.
And she just doesn't know how to say it.
The wording.
So.
The wording
is
off.
It's her.
So then I'm on her side then because I don't know how to word it properly.
Right.
And then we end up going, like, not going at it, but talking about it. And then she's like, we go in a whole circle. And then I'm like, dude, that's what I've been fucking saying this whole time. And she's like,
but that's where we work
well,
because I'm able
like
to
this?
Sit in that conversation mm-hmm. and listen to something that outwardly does not sound like something I agree with or that I'm even willing to hear. But a lot of the times if I'm willing to just hear out the conversation and we can actually just listen to each other's words, like actually think about the meaning, mm-hmm. then usually we're on the same page as well.
Sometimes though you got to get into a headspace to do that.
Yes, because sometimes you're just like, nope, you're an idiot.
Yeah, that's when we separate.
Not listening to that at all. So,
So awesome. There's ZFIS.
ZF, we got that down. The IS is...
Depends on my mood. It could mean investigative services.
The
it could
legal
mean
name.
Intelligence services. It depends.
The legal name.
ZFIS.
There you go.
True, technically,
so,
yeah.
But honestly...
So what does ZFIS do?
So, yes. So we do protective intelligence. And that is vague term intentionally. We do, it really depends on who we're working with. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we're working with, say we're doing litigation support. We're finding somebody who defrauded a group of $14 million. They claim they don't live in the U.S. anymore. They don't have any assets. You know, what are you going to do about it?
Right.
And so my job is to go in, physically locate this person, and then physically locate their assets, see if they've moved them. Did they sell their house to their second cousin in an interfamily deed transfer?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In a cash sale and gather that kind of evidence and kind of expose networks, because that's where the proactive and trying to actually like jump ahead of things, mm-hmm. is not going against that one bad guy, because that one bad guy at that level is you know, pointless. I mean, you've got to go beyond if you want to actually make an impact. And so we are working most often trying to kind of dismantle these networks and these organizations that are committing crimes. And other than that, though, we do travel intelligence. We do vulnerability assessments. So I look at the organization and your board of directors and, mm-hmm. and your donors and your political affiliations. And I analyze, how could a bad actor use this information against you? If I know where your kids go to school and I know their pattern of life and I know where you work and this kind of stuff, it gets very easy to do a phishing attack, or sure. it's very easy to show up at your house when you're away. And so those are the kind of things that I assess, I bring to their attention, but I also make it fun. I got to find some dirt about them, you know. Mm-hmm. and stuff.
That's why when we had our pre-meeting, my question was, what did you yes. find out about me?
And so you were not as interesting.
Yeah, see? Yeah.
But, you know.
And the dogs liked you right away. So
yeah, that's a good thing.
So when you say I was not that interesting, that is a compliment?
Yes.
Okay, I'll take it one.
Yes, I'll take it as one. You're boring, so.
I tell people I would be probably pretty easy to kill because I go the exact same route every single day. I wake up, I go to jiu-jitsu, I come home, I work from home. On Thursdays, I mow the yard. Like, it's...
Yep. Pattern of life.
And that's why you don't have, like, a bad side, which is what she finds.
Yeah, exactly, though. Because you're, like, you know what you're doing. You're minding your business. You're staying in your lane. But if you're one of these guys, I'm going to find articles where you've wronged somebody. Somebody got pissed off and wrote a blog that you don't even know exists.
And then it starts a little rabbit hole for her.
And then it starts a rabbit hole because this person suggests, okay, I know you did this, and it was you and your business partner in 2000. And you guys screwed me over. And so now I'm like, okay, well, now I know this person's involved in at least one illicit.
Well, I've already established that I don't have that entrepreneur bone in me. So I don't run the risk of running afoul of any business partners. I don't have any.
Fair enough. But usually the guys we're like going after, they're usually not, it's not their first time. It's not their first go around. We're getting the calls that, $1 million is missing and we don't know what happened. And so they need to know what's happened. They need to understand the methodology of it so they can prevent it. Mm-hmm. And they also need to understand, you know, is this going to be taken care of, and taken care of in an effective way? Because mm-hmm. if you just take down that lower level guy, like I said, that's usually, it takes 2 seconds to replace him.
Oh,
you know,
absolutely.
The head boss is going to just call up the next guy who lives, you know, down the street and be like, hey, your shift is up now, bud. Like, sorry.
Yeah. Hey, next man up.
Exactly. No problem. And then that's why nothing ever happens. Nothing ever fully takes effect, because they just find a new victim. They move on, do it again.
Yeah. There are plenty of marks out there for sure.
Yeah.
So this seems like it's obviously something that you're very good at, but it's also a passion, right?
It's a passion, yes. Yeah. This is the first year that I'm being called passionate versus excited or overly excited, because I do get passionate about it, because like
they all mean the same thing, right?
Yes, exactly.
Just so you understand.
One seems less insulting.
You know, it's passionate when it's like the kids go to bed, she's already done with work for the whole day, all that, kids are out. And then I'm like, all right, I'm going to go hop on Xbox. Or like, hey, you want to watch a movie? And she's like, no, I'm going to go hop on my computer. And then pulls up her monitors and everything and just back to a sleuth, just digging in everything. And she's like, oh, Ralph, look at this. And I'm like, oh my God.
But then it works
out,
because my clients call me and they say, mm-hmm. holy crap. Like, if we wouldn't have seen these names in your report, we never would have known to ask for that information.
Right.
And so that I see such an impact and such a strength in knowledge, and in, you know, knowledge is power, in my opinion. And it prevents horrible things from happening too.
Sure.
You know, for example, we had a company, they say, okay, we've got, you know, a group of people, about $1 million for a rescue out of Afghanistan. And can you look into this guy and make sure he's a good guy?
So I would imagine if a company is already asking about somebody, they've done something to, you know, raise suspicion. You know, there are some red flags there. Mm-hmm. What would you tell a company? I mean, my natural instinct would just be almost like, well, if you have any reservations and it's $1 million, probably don't do it.
A lot of the people we work with, $1 million is really a drop in the bucket for them. So that's part of that. And then the other part of it is that a lot of the times they're also just a piece of the decision.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes they may have an inkling or a feeling, but they've got to prove to the team
their building evidence is
accurate. And yeah, a lot of the times it is post incident that people are reaching out to us, post wire fraud, post this. when
and you don't get that money back.
No,
usually
of course
it's
not.
gone. Yeah,
yeah. And this person isn't stealing this money because they're well off. They're not stealing this money because they have assets. Like they're stealing because they want it. And so
it's not a game to them.
No, a lot of the times, like that person doesn't have money to pay you back. And if they do, it's probably your own money.
Right, you just got your money
so
back.
You might get a portion of your money back, and
everything else is gone.
Be
by the
owed
time you
for
get
the rest
it.
Of your life. Yeah.
So you guys have. You have other companies, and one of you have a nonprofit, and they all sort of play off of each other, right?
Absolutely.
So there's they you know each form you know a complementary piece of the other one, and so you have ZFIS, and then what's the next piece?
The next piece is I'll let Ralph tell
you.
So
we have the ZFTTC. So ZFTTC is the ZF Tactical Training Center.
Yep.
So that one is, we notice like a lot of holes in civilian world, like when it comes to like law enforcement or like state and all this kind of stuff, to where they have the potential, they have the funding, they have this, but they don't have the time to train, or they don't have the proper assets, or they do it really quick. Like they just put up that new center here in Houston, right? Speaking to someone from the Houston PD, that's booked out 3 years.
Oh, wow.
And they can't even shoot
They're not
sim
allowed
rounds.
To use sim rounds. They're not allowed to use blanks. Nothing like that. It's all dry fire. So running around going bang, 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 bang.
Which
stuff
isn't
like that.
Effective, an effective way
you
to train.
You don't get the full
this
training
feels dorky,
value.
Too.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So that's that portion. So at first when we saw that coming and we were like in this planning phase, we were like, oh, they just tackled that market before we could or helped out in this category that we could. So we were like, okay, well, let's see. And we just continued going down the route we were going. But a huge thing is now there's a lot of, how do you say this? There's like what I was just saying, the loophole training, right? There's like a loophole in everything. So we've also found out that different agencies, right? So say like there's some type of like scenario going on and they call in different law enforcement agencies. Well, now there could be state trooper here, they could be this dude, there could be this guy, but none of them have ever worked together and they don't have an established SOP, which is like a squad or a standard operating procedure. So they're not on the same page of like, hey, when we go in this building, like, you know what you're doing, I know what I'm doing, we're all on the same page. They don't have that. So we're trying to, when we create this, we want to be able to help them like come up with those and everyone to get certified on them, so when they do it, it's fluid. So everything goes through fluidly. You know what I mean? Like there was just recently that event that happened in Texas. And I think if everyone would have been on the same page, something could have happened differently.
Which event?
The shooting.
In Uvalde, yeah.
Because no one went in for how long? And it took someone who knew what they were going to go back in.
For too long. And, you know, in that event specifically, my brother, he's a captain in the Highway Patrol in Oklahoma. And I texted him and I was like, hey, is it... are we expecting too much in this specific thing? And he said, no. And then that event, you go in, you know you're going to get shot. Yeah. You just hope it's not fatal. But you've got to address the problem. I do agree. You know, one thing that I didn't realize, and it may be simplistic in terms of what you're discussing, was that like the alphabet for military is different than law enforcement. And I don't understand why. And I've researched it, and I can't come up with a great answer as why. But that's an example of, you know, if those two groups have to, you think down at the border. You have National Guardsmen working in conjunction with state troopers and
the
Border
Patrol.
The military
is now going on rotations to plus up Border Patrol because there's not enough.
Correct. And they're not even speaking the same language about the same thing. Yeah. So exactly. I think that's a valuable...
The only thing I would think, like, off the top of my head for why is because... Once they cross that bridge at the same alphabet, the same like terminology, same acronyms, the regular world's going to be like, oh, they're militarized.
Well, they're already saying that anyway. You might as well just do it.
And like if they would just cross that bridge and would be all in the same terms, it would work phenomenally. Because then dudes getting out who go over to that, they don't have to relearn anything. They don't have to learn brand new stuff. It's walking into, hey, instead of this is what's going on, transition over all the same stuff.
Well, you're shortening that learning curve, and that to me, especially in a job that requires what that requires, a shorter learning curve would be desirable, I would think. So I think that's an incredible solution to provide, to really try to bridge that gap and create some commonality between agencies that are absolutely going to work together.
And we want to provide like a place for any of them to come and just train. Like if they want trigger time, you can literally come out, rent the range, and run your own stuff. If you want instructors, And we're like in the midst of still like lining all this up. Mm-hmm. We're still in the funding portion of it.
Okay.
So once we knock that out, we're then making contact. We're trying to get like the top guys. And like anyone sure. listening who knows who the top guys are, they know there's only like three elements of them, and one of them's British, right? And then there's mm-hmm. two American. Mm-hmm. So they know that that's where we're going to be looking for.
Sure.
And that's the type of guys that we want to bring. Because like me, regular infantry, do I have those? No, I can't do that.
Sure.
Like I cannot teach the dudes.
I mean, he what could, but the guys that we're going to be teaching are going to look at him like...
Well, yeah. It's the difference, like in jiu-jitsu, a black belt instructor or a purple yeah. belt instructor. I know the same stuff the yeah. black belt does. He's
exactly.
just way better at it than
yeah.
me.
Oh, but I don't even know the stuff. That
yeah, well.
These dudes,
but
like...
Either yeah. way, are, it's the same concept.
It's the yeah. same concept.
Yeah. And so me it, is, like, it, pouring silly putty through, like, some type of thing. But then you pour, like, the regular human being, and it's like pouring, like, just one big rock. Like, it doesn't
right,
fucking
it doesn't
move.
Fit at
but
all.
But then you take these dudes who are, like, phenomenal, and mm-hmm. it's literally, like, just water. And it's, like, right. you watch it, and then somehow it's just phenomenal.
So I'll connect you with a guy in our neighborhood up there in Conroe. He's a retired Green Beret, mm-hmm. and he actually just the other day reached out on Facebook, one of our Facebook groups, and was like, hey, anyone in the neighborhood, I would like everyone in the neighborhood to be as lethal as possible. So I'll teach you tactical maneuvers, how to clear a house yeah. with mm-hmm. the weapon that you use, this and that. So mm-hmm. he and I are supposed to go shooting at some point, but I'll connect you guys. I think he might be a good asset for you
yeah.
Here that's pretty local, yeah. honestly, you know, 30 yeah. minutes away, whatever.
Yeah.
But I think that's a fantastic thing. And then the nonprofit that you guys have, tell me a little bit about that.
This is Olivia's baby, so yes. this is going to be...
Right.
I was already taking a deep yeah. breath and prepping.
You had your chance to speak. Now just hang up.
Yeah.
So the Relentless Revival Safe Haven, that is our nonprofit, and it's going to be, soon to be, a long-term sustainable safe haven for human trafficking survivors. And it's going to have an 18 to 24 month-long restorative care program. So personal and professional development, specialized therapy, you know, either, like addiction therapy, trauma therapy, we'll do animal assisted therapy, art therapy, and then economic empowerment through mm-hmm. internships and guided networking and career coaching to get them to that point where when they're done with our program, they have an idea of exactly who they are and what their strengths are and where they're going to go from that point on. Long-term goal is to have an emergency placement facility as well. So if you can kind of imagine like a 24-person barracks. And we want to have like
That's a lack.
Yeah, it's an extreme need.
Speaking to the people who already have the safe havens and stuff, the mm-hmm. one thing that's needed to help with it, like, yeah, there's not enough long-term facilities, but right now they're recovering these survivors, right? After they finish their interviews and all that kind of stuff, they're just like, okay, like,
you can go.
Yeah, like
you're
where
free to
are they
go.
Supposed to go? They've been.
Well, they're
going to
go right back to where
exactly.
they were.
Exactly. If
yeah.
they do,
right,
and if they do, they're going to be beat up. They're going to get their money taken away.
It's going to be horrible.
And if they don't, then they've got the clothes on their back and the streets.
And there's this tower of power, and wherever they were, when they leave and come back, they're right back to the bottom.
Yeah. Right.
So
right.
They have
lose
no options.
Everything. So it's not like a, hey, reach out for help, and guaranteed I'm going to get help.
No, it's like we are probably not going to have help for you. We will not have help.
Like, so now it's a gamble for them. Like, I understand from their situation now, like, I don't want to gamble if I'm alive, technically, right now. Like,
yeah,
my
mean,
life might be absolutely horrible.
It's
but
terrible,
I'm alive.
But I'm alive, yeah.
But exactly. I'm alive, yeah.
But, or,
and I don't know if I can get better. I don't know if I can have something better than what I have right now.
Or if I even deserve something
yeah,
better.
Exactly.
There's so much brainwashing mm-hmm. that goes into that type of a thing.
They just trauma bond them to the max.
It's terrible.
It's horrible, yeah.
Yes.
And
so,
we've heard some stories that are, like, literally, like, if I would see it on a movie, I'd be like, dude, that's too fucked up. Like, I don't want to watch that.
It's
and
the
I'm like,
darkest.
I can't believe it.
It's
I
the darkest
can't
thing.
I literally can't believe it.
I used to live next door to an FBI agent that was a cybercrime
yeah.
agent. And I didn't even stop to think about what he dealt with until he and I were talking one day. And I was like, so what do you just deal with, like, embezzlement
yeah.
or whatever? He's like, no, man, mm-hmm. like, kiddie porn. And I was like, oh, well, never mind then. I'd never want
to
talk about it.
Yeah, you're dealing with the people that have to hide from the public.
Right.
The ones that go, you know, to the cyber world.
His point that he made to me was, imagine going into a home of someone that you've never been in their home, and when you walk in, you just feel it is a gross place.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you know.
Yeah, your skin crawls.
It just feels gross in that place.
Yeah.
And so, man, that's amazing. I think it's sadly something that is needed,
yeah.
right?
But, yeah.
But it's great. And so those three things will go together. They'll complement one another. And one thing I've noticed about entrepreneurs, I've said this on another episode, is that entrepreneurs tend to be some of the most giving people. They always, it's like, oh man, we're going to give back.
Yeah.
And it's
hard to give back when you're working under somebody. You're not making enough, or you don't have that ability to direct money or direct energy.
Yeah,
especially energy, because that's really what it is. Mm-hmm. It's most often, it's like...
It is energy, because by the time you get to the point you can give back, how much energy have you given to get to that point?
Yeah. A lot of it,
exactly.
For sure.
So you finally get to that point where you're like, hey, I can give back,
but
I have
I'd
nothing
rather
left inside of me to even care about anything at this moment.
Man, that's awesome. Is that an active thing already, or is that in the works? Or
so it's active. Our entity exists. We are waiting for our tax exemption status, which is going to be a big deal for donors. So that's kind of been holding us back.
We did have legit attorneys file it.
Yes. So hopefully it'll be back in the next couple of weeks.
Our good friend that literally I worked with in Hawaii, right? An Irish dude, ginger guy, dirty blonde. Phelan,
just
right?
Ginger.
Ginger. He's been since, dirty blonde guy, right? Since Hawaii, like, we've played video games every single night together. Well, just about every single night since I've known him, when we're not in the field. And he's a civilian. He's already transitioned and all this kind of stuff. And he has literally been, like, the one saving grace, to where for a while, like, we'd play at night and, like, I didn't tell him anything because I'm not open about that kind of stuff, especially with friends. And one time I slipped about it and he was like, dude, let me know if you need help, man. And he was like, and then like we talked to him about everything we were doing, and then he was all stoked about it. And then later on, about like a couple weeks later, like we were about to, like Jeep was about to be gone, like house was toast, like everything was toast. And that was right before we are like to where everything would be comfortable. So it was that point, and I was like, dude, I'm drowning right now, man. We are so deep. And he was like, well, what do you need? And I told him what we needed, and he sent like a lot over that. And was like, bro, I'm taking care of my mom. I'm at home right now. I don't have much overhead. And he was like, and I get paid ridiculous amount of hours.
And he knows that we're the people that we're going to return it tenfold, and we're going to take care of him for, you know, as long as time goes on. And he knows that motivates us, too, because he's part of the team. You know,
sure.
He's part of the family. And regardless of what happens, like, he's taken care of in our eyes. Like, we'll make sure that happens. And we've been fortunate. Like, our friends have been so supportive and so like, oh no, they're gonna make it, no problem. Like, you know, all of our friends, when we have doubts, they don't have a single doubt in the world.
Well, I know a lot of entrepreneurs, and all of them have the same traits that you guys have, and it's that, you know, hey, this is what we're doing, and we're doing it because we know it's the right thing to do, and we know it's the way that it needs to be done.
Yeah.
And you're solving a problem.
Yes.
And I would be, you'd be hard pressed to find an entrepreneur out there that's had any level of success that hasn't had someone help them or encourage them or whatever. So I would say, you know, don't shy away from that help, and then when you're able to
return it,
be helpful.
And then that just
that
gives
was
us,
the sweetest part was after that first initial help, he was like, hey man, didn't ask for jack shit in return. He was like, didn't ask for like a percentage of the company, didn't ask for anything. He was like, until you guys get good, all the company bills for like the software, anything, he was like, let me know how much they are.
Wow.
And that was it.
Obviously, for us, like, that translates into ownership. That translates into
you
having an invested interest.
We're giving you a percent
in what we
of
do.
Every single one that we're doing. Because, like, without him, the Jeep would have been gone. The house would have possibly, like, we were on the rocks. I don't know. Maybe we could have navigated it. You know what I mean? But thankfully, we didn't have to, like, drop into that category of hitting that.
You didn't have to figure it out. Mm-hmm. He helped you with that. So,
yeah.
And now you're to a point with the ZFIS stuff where you've got good clientele.
Yeah.
You have steady work,
yeah.
And things are looking up. So
that
then,
can float our boat
for
the
first
the
time, we've transitioned to uphill.
Yeah,
yeah.
And now we're on that uphill track to where, in the very, very, very near future, we're going to be able to start giving back.
That's awesome.
At least in that category, and then it'll keep like our family self-sustainable, 100% without a doubt. Just off like this next week, keep us 100% self-sustainable for like long term, right? To where we can continue to look, because the biggest like issue we have is with an investor is like-minded.
Right.
Right. Like, yes, the money is amazing. And yes, we've ran all the numbers. We've ran everything. Like, it's profitable. It's a great thing. But we don't want someone who's just about greed or someone who just cares about this. Like, you have to care about the people. You have to care about the mindset. You have to care about the environment we're trying to create.
Well, you got to care about the mission and know that the ROI is there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because the mission is sound, right?
We know we have the card because the ROI is there.
Yes.
Like on this, it's a really big investment because it's 5,000 acres.
Wow.
Yeah. Right, so it's a large, that's majority of, that's a little bit less than half.
Do I get free access to come shoot and stuff?
Yeah.
Yes. The whole reason I started this podcast.
Only if you let me sit there and sweat again.
You can, yeah.
It will be Ranger panties next time. I won't be able to
stop. She turned me down. I was like, all right, hey, since the table is there and it's so hot, can I wear Ranger panties?
For sure you can wear, you could have, and I have Ranger panties. I should have. You know what I should do?
My mindset was like, well, he's not even really prior service. Like,
well, she didn't think he would
you don't understand. I have so many friends. I have so many friends that are military.
Yeah.
And many of them will wear Ranger panties under their jujitsu gi and whatever else.
See? I heard he did jujitsu, I was like, all right, he's basically the same line as us.
So here's the thing. So here's what all of my buddies that are military will say. There are two things that sort of grandfathers me into that. Oil field, lifetime oil field.
Yeah.
Is horrific as you can imagine in terms of crudeness and jujitsu.
Mm-hmm.
Those two things,
you're good.
Just a bunch of savages.
They will
just,
not offend you.
Never.
That's for sure.
Not a chance. And there's a good chance that we will offend everything else around us, though. But that's
how
okay.
That's how we do it.
That's their fault.
That's literally how it goes.
That's their fault.
I apologize, you're so sensitive.
Yeah, hey man, that must be rough, living life like that.
Literally.
But you guys are it's awesome to have you guys on. It's great to see, you know, this side of it. Several of the episodes are guys that have established businesses that have been doing it, and they're off and
running.
We have
to remind you that we all suffered. We're in the suffrage, you know, we're working our way out of it.
We're coming out of the
suffrage. We're out of the suffrage now, but we're fresh suffering, so we're like, we still remember.
So the guy I interviewed yesterday, he is not in the fresh suffering stages, but he will tell you that, in fact, what he said was, being an entrepreneur is, he labeled it a special kind of sickness, but then he said it's literally like, hey, by noon you think you're going to be a billionaire, and then in an hour you're broke, and then by the end of the day you're like, I'm going to be a billionaire again. It's just over and over and over.
Absolutely.
And I'm thankful that there are people that are geared that way, because I'm just not. Where my skill set lies is helping the entrepreneurs be successful, and you know, not just with this kind of stuff, but you know, companies I work for, you know. The term I think they use is intrapreneur.
Yeah.
Right.
You want them to be successful.
Right. I'll work hard to make you successful, and then in turn you'll reward me for that by keeping me employed or whatever.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's something that if there weren't people out there that with that mindset, there would be no growth. There in a lot of ways there would be no America. There wouldn't be a lot of the things that we've come accustomed to know and love. And I think that the things that you guys are working on, beginning first with the ZFIS, and then you know, obviously the nonprofit, is going to be amazing. It's going to change lives.
Yes.
And then the tactical shooting thing, with me having free lifetime membership, is awesome. But just being able to get those agencies to work together, I think is critical. And it's awesome. It's great to sit down and talk to you guys. Thank you for opening up the garage of your home. For this
anytime.
I definitely am thinner after
this.
Did you
want the cool backdrop, or did you want just regular house?
Well, we had that discussion, and you did give me the option to move it to 7 o'clock, and I was like, first of all, it'll still be 95 degrees
at
7.
It will, yes.
But I had some other commitments this evening.
I look like
so
I'm on spring break over here.
Well,
my white shirt.
Surely you'd not wear a shirt at spring break, but the backdrop is awesome. But at the end of the day, man, you guys are incredible. And what I want to do is I want to check back in with you guys in a year or, you know, whatever,
see
how things are going.
A lifetime difference.
We'll have this at the facility next
correct.
Time.
Yeah, yeah, that'll be a blast.
The intro can be you shooting on the range. Everyone can view you and give you some judgment.
They're going to be so impressed.
Exactly.
Yeah, they'll be so impressed. But, again, I can't thank you guys enough for the hospitality and the time. And your stories are amazing. And just thank you so much for being a part of this.
Thank you for inviting
appreciate
us.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having us. Seriously.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Yes,
all right,
thank you.